Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone, and welcome to the fabulous Coach on Fire Radio Network. My name is Petra Williams, and I am your fire enabler, here to give you the tools and strategies to live a life of personal freedom. And we have had a fun morning already with technology. It is always the bane of my life, technology. It's such a wonderful tool, and yet sometimes it really makes me go gray before my time. And today I have a wonderful woman with me, as always, a phenomenal rock star by the name of Susan. Good morning, Susan. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me on your show.
Fabulous. Well, Susan is a diverse athlete with a background in swimming, equestrian, and is an Olympic bronze medalist in canoeing. Susan proudly represented Australia at the 2016 Rio Olympic Games and was the first Australian in history to win a medal in the para canoe at the Paralympic Games. Susan is not only an Olympic champion, but she is also an ICF world champion and has dual world champion and gold medals in para canoeing in the 200-meter sprint and dual bronze medalist for para canoeing in the 200-meter sprint. There's V1 and K1 in front of those things, which I'm sure Susan will tell us what that means. And on top of that, Susan is also the three-time national champion and international bronze medalist in the sport of para equestrian dressage. Wow, that is quite a mouthful. Well, Susan, tell us more about yourself. Who is Susan?
I'm just an everyday girl who just got into sport as a young age. I was born with a disability. It's called arthrogryposis multiplex congenita, and it's a big, long, confusing word that basically means that I wasn't born with all the muscles in my legs, and also my joints in my legs don't work properly. They don't have full range. And I basically just was born, and nobody knew that I would be born with this condition, so it came to quite a shock to my parents. They were very resilient and just treated me like a normal child and sent me off to school, and I didn't get any special treatment. I did spend a lot of time in hospital. I had my first operation when I was only 4 weeks old. So I was in and out of hospital during my schooling. But one of the things that was recommended to me when I was young was sport. Because the movement and everything would be great physiotherapy for my condition. And so when I was 4 years old, I was taught to swim, and I really enjoyed it. And being weightless in the water, I really loved. And I discovered my passion for competition back in those days. And then I just continued on with different sports, and that's how my life has panned out.
How interesting. You know, I was just listening to a podcast from TED Talk Radio, and this man, he's blind. He was born, he wasn't born blind, he was born with cancer on the eyes, and at, I believe, at 3 and 6 months or something to that effect, he had his eyes removed. And his parents loved him so much that they allowed him to live like a normal child, and I use normal in inverted commas, to explore, to be curious, to just to be a normal child. And they were talking about how restricting a child instills fear in them. and makes them think that they are less capable because of their condition. And so I'm interested that you said that your parents found you and your condition a surprise. How did you find that out?
Well, I guess as a child, you kind of want to fit in and kind of want to do what everybody else is doing. And obviously my parents tried to facilitate that for me as much as possible. But then it's like later on in life, you realize that the differences are what make you unique, and you can have talents that really add value to the world. And I was never told that I couldn't do anything because of my disability. You know, there was always a way around doing things differently to everybody else, but still being capable of doing stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I have an older brother who doesn't have any condition or anything. So, I just wanted to be like him and treated the same way as him.
And what was your relationship like with him growing up?
Yeah, we were fine. He was into sport. He used to play soccer and cricket. And I remember as a child, he would strap me into the cricket pads and the cricket gear and sit me in front of the wickets and throw balls at me. So, you know, he didn't really treat me any differently from anybody else. And, I remember getting being put in Goldie as well when he played soccer, and I would be put in the goal and he would just kick balls at me. So, the same kind of rough and tough brotherly love that little sisters get when I was growing up.
Amazing. Yeah, and what does he think of your success in the sport now?
I'm sure that he's really proud of me. We have a good relationship, and he just got married last year, so he's doing his own thing now. He's in film and television, and then I've gone to sport, so we don't really have a lot of crossover anymore, but fond memories.
Absolutely, growing up is certainly a fond memory. And just coming back to growing up, what was it, because Susan came to my house today, and she walked up the stairs, and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this house is just not wheelchair friendly. And I thought the whole of Australia massively is still not wheelchair friendly, and it is a constant work in progress. Yet I would imagine when you were growing up, it was even less so. So how was it moving around in school? Had the friends help you? How was that for you? Because carrying your bag and moving yourself around, how did you cope with all of that?
Yeah, I was pretty lucky that I went to a really nice school, and I made a lot of friends, and they would help me a lot. And obviously my legs weren't really, really helpful for me, but I had a lot of upper body strength that helped get me around and up and down stairs. And yeah, I was just, quite resilient as a child, and kind of just wanted to keep up with everybody and just had to do things differently. But it's definitely moving towards a more accessible Australia. And that's why, you know, I'm really proud to be a part of the Paralympics and to be a Paralympian, because the Paralympics are not only the highest level in sport, but there's also a huge social significance that it has on the community and on the world, because it demonstrates that there's amazing and inspiring things people with disabilities can achieve. And I believe that sport is helping change public perceptions and attitudes towards people with disability, and it's beginning to produce a culture that not only provides inspiration for all people, but proof that determination to overcome adversity is achievable. And I actually got some junk mail the other day, and it was from, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the actual shops that they're from. Major shops, Target and Kmart, I got some junk mail. It was their catalog. And they actually had a model. In both of them, they had a model with a disability. And it was their back-to-school. Yeah, it was their back-to-school catalog. So, and I think that, you know, when I was a kid, the impact of being able to see someone who looked like me, in a magazine and kind of mainstream media would have been really impactful. And I think that's a responsibility of Paralympians and people in my position to kind of push for that, to make everything more accessible and to get it more, like, out there that, you know, 20% of Australia have a disability. And so we need that to be represented, and we need to create better access. And, it is moving forward, definitely.
That is fantastic news to say, there's always this talk about the inclusion of diversity, and yet to hear that there is a model with disabilities in a mainstream catalog is a massive leap forward. How exciting. And I love that. We should try and find that somewhere and post that, because that would just be so phenomenal. Oh, we should totally we'll put something on Facebook to show how amazing that is and to promote that, because absolutely it is about inclusion. Because realistically, and I'm sure you would agree with this, you know, in your everyday life, you're walking around, and very rarely do you see people in wheelchairs or any sort of form of disability. And so when you do find someone who is in a wheelchair, it almost becomes awkward, which is ridiculous, because all they're doing is sitting down. It's not a big deal. But yet because it's still, I find, so hidden from society. So what do you, and I'm interested to say, that you said that it's our responsibility, or it's the Paralympics' responsibility, or people with disability, it's their responsibility to get into the public eye. How would you suggest that they do that and still cope with the trolls that are out there?
Well, I mean, if you have a disability, there's lots of challenges that you have to overcome and deal with. And since my 30 years on this planet, I have seen a lot of positive change towards inclusiveness. And I think the Paralympic movement has made has helped that a lot. We had, you know, Channel 7 was broadcasting the Paralympics last year, which have a station that was that big broadcast us was fantastic. And I know a few other Paralympians who have gone into media. Dylan Alcott, he's a tennis gold medalist. He won gold in the wheelchair tennis, and he's doing some great work and getting out there in the media. And I guess it's a responsibility of people who have a disability and have achieved incredible things to get that out there and encourage other people to get out there as well and achieve more than maybe some people think that they're capable of. And I mean, we only really place limitations on ourselves, and being labeled disabled by society, it has never been offensive to me, but I don't think it's a really accurate description of people with disabilities. And I've heard Dylan use the word, I don't know if he made it up or if he stole it from somewhere else, but he uses the word differently abled. And I love that. And I think it more accurately describes people with disabilities that we're fully capable of doing things, we just do them differently.
Well, that's fantastic, because I remember when we originally met and, you know, you were using the term disabled and we were all using it. And I did say to you that I don't believe that that's the accurate word, because you have achieved more in your lifetime than most people, you know, or you have achieved more in your 30 years of being alive than most people will achieve in their lifetime. And and we did have that discussion, didn't we, where we were saying what would be the right terminology, because and so differently abled is fantastic. I like that. I think we will use that from now on. Differently abled. We will promote that. What do you think, Susan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the Paralympics, there was some incredible things that even I was inspired by. There was a archer who had no arm, and he was using his feet to string the bow and hold the bow and his mouth to pull back the string. And I mean, that's fully capable, you know, he's fully capable of doing that. But he just does it differently to everybody else. And another example was, there was also a table tennis player who had no arms, and he was just had the bat in his mouth, and you know, he was fully capable of playing table tennis without arms, but yeah, he was just doing it differently to everyone else. And so I think that shows how capable people with disabilities are, but doing it differently.
Absolutely. And it is incredible how as human beings, we are able to adapt to our environments. And, you know, we just look at how we used to have food in the past or so on and so forth. And it's just incredible how we can adapt to our environment. And I just absolutely love that. You bring up the word resilience quite often. And I do love that word, because I think it's so important to have that. What does the word resilience mean to you?
It's really about never giving up and always, you know, there's always going to be challenges in life that you have to face. And it's about withstanding those challenges and trying to achieve what you want. And I always wanted to go to the Paralympics as an equestrian rider. And I did equestrian for 19 years. And so I was very, very committed to equestrian, and I wanted to succeed in that. But it just didn't happen. I just didn't make it to the Paralympics. I tried for Beijing in 2008, but I didn't get selected for the team. And later on, I decided to give the equestrian away because it was too expensive. And, you know, so a setback like that, you know, you kind of wonder whether, you know, you're going to make your dreams come true. My dream was to represent Australia at the Paralympics. But I never gave up hope that I wouldn't achieve that dream. And then canoeing came along, and paracanoe gave me a second chance at achieving my dream. So I guess that's, you know, demonstrating being resilient and kind of being open to finding a new path and to new opportunities that will help you reach your goals.
Yeah, and that's so interesting, because I believe we had a bit of a conversation about that before, and that wasn't an easy time for you, was it, when, you know, you didn't make the cut for the equestrian, and then after 19 years you sort of went, what now? And it wasn't, because I know I love it when successful people just brush over details, because they're just like, oh yeah, it's awesome because I just persevered. But I remember, what did you do in between that period between equestrian and canoeing? So did you give up equestrian when you didn't make it into the Paralympics?
No, I actually continued on after 2008, and I made the world the World Equestrian Games, it was called, which is the world championship for all equestrian sports. And I made the team for that in 2010. But unfortunately, it was going to cost me too much money to send my horse over. And I just couldn't afford to get there. And kind of, so shortly after that, I decided to kind of take a break. I wasn't really retiring, or I thought that, you know, I could always go back to equestrian. But yeah, I decided to take a break, and yeah, I guess I was a bit lost for a little while because sport and equestrian had played such a big part in my life. And, you know, you kind of schedule your life around your sport when you're that, you know, into it. So yeah, I was kind of a bit lost, but I did a bit of charity work, which I really enjoy, and I think it's really important because I still want to be involved with animals, and so I volunteered at the RSPCA and took a lot of enjoyment out of that. And yeah, I was just kind of looking for new opportunities, and that's where the paracanoe came in. But yeah, I was definitely just floating around for about a year, not really doing anything, and kind of a really big break from, you know, being so competitive and being in high level sport for so long.
Yeah, that, and that's I understand that that's also quite difficult for athletes sometimes when they are so used to working so hard towards something, and then all of a sudden that stops. You know, the due to injury, or they have to retire. And it really is that adjustment to where I fit in. And you've obviously found canoeing, which is, thank goodness for Australia, that you found that. Coming just to the Paralympics, because that must have been like a phenomenal experience, especially the opening. What is it, the opening ceremony or the closing ceremony? Which one did you enjoy the most?
Yeah, the opening ceremony was, amazing, because we got to walk out with this whole Australian Paralympic team into the stadium and whole underneath the flag. And, yeah, the crowd was amazing. It was a full packed stadium, and it was just a really exciting and great atmosphere to be in. And I thought the opening ceremony was so cool, and there was some really nice moments in it, like the lighting of the torch, and just a lot of respect for past Paralympians as well, and how far, you know, the Paralympics have come in its relatively short time. You know, it's the first Paralympics was in 1960s. So that was in Rome. So it's not really been a long time compared to, you know, the Olympics. But to see how much change has happened and how it's been embraced by countries, and, you know, it's lucky that, you know, I love Australia, but I've traveled a lot, and it's not, you know, the same in other countries. There's not the same amount of respect and equality between for people with disabilities in all countries. So I think that's another thing that the Paralympics is trying to change. And yeah, it's just an incredible experience, and yeah, I'll never forget that feeling.
Amazing. And so, yeah, I remember you saying before that that was the one place you felt truly accepted, because people didn't look at you and go, oh, what's wrong with you? They looked at you and said, what sport are you participating in? How did that feel for you, being fully accepted and not being seen for you for being differently abled, but being seen for the person and the athlete that you are?
Yeah, that's one of the great things that I loved about being in the athlete's village and the community. And yeah, we just didn't really see ourselves as disabled or differently abled. We just want to know, you know, meet people for who they are and what sport they're doing. And yeah, it's an interesting community feel, and I heard that one day, you know, the whole world is like that, that, you know, people see different people and they don't have to question, you know, or ask what, you know, is different about them. They just focus on the person and their talents, and it would be a really nice environment to live in, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now tell me, there's always that thing on the news that there are thousands upon thousands of condoms being sent out to the Olympics. Is it really as horny, as rampant as everyone says it is?
there were some condom dispensers in the village.
Well, I've always been interested to know, because they always say like there was millions of condoms dispensed, and I'm thinking, wow, like what is it about the Olympics that makes everyone so horny? So I was just interested to know if that was really the case.
In one place, so there's a few couples at the with athletes too, so I'm sure they could have made use of the facility.
Look, I get it. What do they say? What happens on tour stays on tour. So we'll
yeah,
leave
that's
it
right,
there.
That's right. no comment.
No comment. I love that. So tell me, you won the bronze medal in the para canoeing. You were the first Australian and the first woman to win that. How on earth did that feel, getting on that podium and receiving that medal?
It was an amazing moment, and I was so lucky to have a friend of mine, Katie, who flew all the way from Australia with my mum, who flew all the way from Australia to be in the crowd, and got to see it in the crowd when I was getting my medal, and a lot of Australian supporters were there, and yeah, it was just an incredible moment, and it kind of flashes before your eyes really quickly, but yeah, it was I have to say it's life-changing, really. It really is life-changing.
Yeah, and I held the medal, and the medal is actually quite heavy. It's quite a heavy piece of metal. So when they pull it around your neck, were you surprised at the weight of it?
Yeah, they're all 500 grams, the medals. And, I was just admiring it and touching it. And, it's really cool. It's got braille on it. And it actually makes a noise. All the medals make a different noise, so the visually impaired athletes can hear as well as read the braille as to what.
Amazing.
Which is a really cool initiative, innovation that they've done this last year.
And it's so wonderful to hear about these things, because we're not aware of them, and yet there are people out there constantly working hard to create an inclusive environment. And it is really fantastic that amazing sports people like you are getting out there and promoting equality and diversity and acceptance. And you said you did a bit of speaking with younger children and really enjoyed that. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I've done a few primary school talks for actually friends of mine. And, I really actually really love talking to the kids. And they're just so open to, and they're just so excited and interested in learning about the Paralympics and people with disabilities. And I went to one school and did a talk to grade one. And they're just adorable kids. And one of the kids was actually in a wheelchair. And, you know, she had lots of questions. She wanted to know, you know, can she drive? You know, she was looking into her future and just seeing someone similar to her, you know, doing things, driving, you know, simple things like that, that she didn't know if she'd be able to do, was really, you know, important and, you know, inspiring her to think, you know, she has a really positive future and she can really do whatever she wants in life. And, you know, and that's for people with disabilities and also for able-bodied kids. They have really nothing stopping them from achieving great things in their life and overcoming whatever adversity life throws at them as well. So, yeah, I think it's really important to talk to kids and get them used to seeing people that are different to them and just not being too curious about it, just going, oh, yep, that's cool. They're kind of just exactly like you and they have the same, we have the same goals and aspirations. And, yeah, it's really important. And, I thoroughly enjoyed doing that. So, yeah, it was really cool.
Awesome, and what a great initiative to go, and it sort of shows you as well that prejudice is learnt and that it's not innate. And so, yeah, I highly encourage you to keep doing that, and also for the older children, because eventually somehow the prejudice seeps in, and if we can stop that from happening, that would be absolutely amazing. So tell me, who was most influential in your life? Was it your mum or your dad?
Yeah, definitely my mum always has supported me and given me the opportunities to do the things that I've wanted to do. She's always been kind of there for me and kind of, yeah, never really held me back from trying things. And, I think having... She has a great attitude towards it too. I think that's important that she passed on to me to kind of always give things a go and try things. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you fail at something because you can always learn. And, no one's really good at anything when they first try. So to just keep going and pick yourself up and trying again. So, yeah, definitely my mum has been a great influence and very positive influence on my life.
That's fantastic. What's that song? Was it one of the cartoon movies when you pick yourself up and try again? No? That doesn't sound right. But anyway, there is definitely a song about that somewhere. I find that there's in our current society, there is such an apathy, such an acceptance to mediocre. And such a blaming society with lack of accountability. How do you, and it sounds so easy and it's sometimes hard to think about it because you do it so often, but how do you fall off the horse and get back up again in life? What do you say to yourself? What do you believe about yourself that helps you get back up when you fall off?
I definitely had to learn this lesson riding horses, because when I was learning, I used to fall off a lot. And it was really important. My coach would always, as long as I wasn't injured, make me get back on the horse. And I guess it's an individual thing. So for me, I think it's about pushing through feelings and not being caught up with feelings, because, you know, of course you're going to be scared and, you know, when you fail, embarrassed, well, you're going to have a flood of feelings that are probably negative. But, you know, you don't have to buy into those feelings, and you can still just start doing something even though you don't maybe have a full belief. And I guess you kind of can build confidence through experience, and you're not always going to be feeling good or having a pleasant, feeling, but you still just got to do it. Like, I guess I could use the training as an example. I mean, Going into the Paralympics is training so much, and through winter as well, you know, and you get up before the sun rises and it's freezing cold, and you get into your boat and the water's cold and your fingers get wet and cold, and your face, you know, there's a wind and your face gets frozen, and you know, and that's not pleasant, you know. It's not something that I love to do, training, you know, in the middle of winter. And but you know, you just got to do it, and you've got to think about your goals and what you want to achieve, and sometimes you just have to go through some kind of bad stuff to get where you want to go.
I love that you bring up goals, because as a coach, I have many clients come to me because they feel overwhelmed and they feel lost, and because they don't have goals and they don't have something to strive towards, and often they get stuck in the paradox of choice. They often struggle because there's so many options that they struggle to identify what they want. How do you set your goals and keep your eye on the prize? And what advice, if a friend came to you and said, I'm really struggling to set goals, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, it's a really hard one. I guess because when I started in sport, I was really young, and kind of I have always kind of been able to go back to sport. Obviously, changing sports has been, you know, a big challenge, and, you know, you reassess goals and it's quite difficult sometimes. But it definitely helps to have a goal, especially to get through, you know, more difficult challenges. I guess it's just finding something that you're really passionate about and that you really want, and then you'll be more inclined to work towards it. Sometimes there's, I don't know if it's exactly a saying, but often things that are difficult are the things that are worth doing, and sometimes you just got to push through those difficult parts to get to where you want.
Yeah, keeping your eye on the prize is the main thing, isn't it? So tell me how, because I've done some research, and there's a very famous Harvard study about relationships that said, if you know someone's got your back, you're more inclined to be happier and more successful in life. So who has your back, and who has had your back in the past? And how has that helped you take the risks necessary to be the champion that you are today?
Well, I guess, you know, I've had a supportive family, which has helped. And I guess really coaches, actually, I've been really fortunate to have some, well, good and bad coaches. But the good coaches that you want to work with, when they have kind of, they can kind of believe in you more than you can even believe in yourself, and they might see something, they can see a lot more talent in you than sometimes you can even see yourself. And I think that's what's really helped me, having really supportive coaches that, you know, push you, but also, you know, tell you, you know, can see potential in you, and can kind of believe in you when sometimes you don't even have that belief in yourself. And yeah, I've definitely had some great coaches over the years in equestrian and in swimming and paratonu. So yeah, that's really helped me.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's, yeah, really having that support, either in a coach or in a family member, is so essential. Because I feel that because we're living in such an individual society these days, we've lost that sense of community. And so lots of people feel quite isolated. So having that coach, that mentor, that support system is so important. And where do you have that support system outside of the sport? Is there time to do anything outside of training for you, really?
Is there time to do anything outside of training?
So I would imagine it takes up quite a bit of time, the training and the the getting up early in the morning to drive, what, an hour or so or whatever to get to your training.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some serious dedication. So what do you do in your spare time?
Yeah, I just like relaxing, and usually I'm quite tired from training, so just doing relaxing things around the house. And when I have the time, I foster cats for the RSPCA.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I like doing, yeah, community things and volunteering for charities and, yeah, just relaxing. Because you train so hard and you work so hard, it's nice to do something that you don't have to do so much effort. But yeah, when I have time, I also do some other sports. I've done wheelchair tennis for a bit of social fun, and yeah, I'm keen for any kind of opportunities to come and.
I know, it's just interesting because I know it's such a intense schedule often, and I know you're training for another competition coming up in August, so I would imagine the training to be quite intense. So yeah, I was just wondering what Olympians do in their spare time. how does it work financially? I've always been interested in that too, because you mentioned before that equestrian was quite expensive. So when you win a medal at the Olympics, is there sort of a financial reward attached to that too? And how do you go about funding yourself through all of this? Because this is really your job. So how does it work on the financial side of things?
Yeah, it's really individual to each sport. So in paracanoe, we do get a lot of financial support from Australian Canoeing, which is great. So when we travel overseas, our travel and accommodation is usually covered, as well as entry to world championships. I do fundraising, and I actually have a account with Australian Sports Foundation where you can make tax-deductible donations that will help me with my training and to purchase equipment as well. It's a big expense. So it's mainly, we do get a little bit of money from the government, the Australian Sports Commission, especially when you win a medal. They try to support you a bit more. But the fundraising and through donations of the generous Australian public, which I'm really, really appreciative of any support people would like to give me.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely put that link in the show notes so people can donate to you to help you keep up the phenomenal work you do, because sport does bind a community, it binds a country, and it also breaks prejudice, and it brings together community. So it's definitely a worthwhile cause to donate to, so we'll definitely put that in there. Tell me, what are you most grateful for these days?
Oh, jeez, that's so many things. I'm grateful to live in such a great country that we have in Australia, and what it's like nowadays for people with disabilities, and how inclusive and how society is really embracing inclusion. And I'm grateful for finding sport and being finding my niche in life, which is sport, and obviously representing Australia. I'm very grateful to represent this great country, and I'm seeing my dream come true. which I know is something that some people strive all their life and never get there, but the journey to get there is almost as important as achieving their dream. So yeah, I'm very grateful that I actually made it.
Fantastic, and you're absolutely right. It's the journey, actually, that counts. It's not even the destination. It definitely is the journey. I'm interested, you sound so together and so confident and, you know, like such a pioneer for people with who are differently abled. Do you like it? I'm using it now, which
I like
do
it.
Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got to get it into the community.
Absolutely. We're totally coining it. Have you always been this confident? And can you tell us about a time when you weren't feeling so confident and how you sort of got out of that?
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't been this confident all my life, of course. I think it's just taken experience and being open to opportunities. Yeah, I get really nervous speaking, and I have done a few talks and, you know, been absolutely terrified, you know, but I guess it's kind of a fake it until you make it kind of thing, and again, not letting those feelings of fear overwhelm you. And yeah, and I guess, you know, with practice and experience, you become more confident. And you know, it's something you have to continually work at, you know? Like being on the radio live is quite a scary thing to do. But, you know, because you want to get your message across, you kind of do these things. And the more you do them, the more confident you get at them.
Yeah, and so what I'm constantly hearing from you, which is I know what I'm aiming for, you know, I know what the vision is and the goal is, and I'm taking the action. So it's the age-old saying of feel the fear, but do it anyway. And you're a true testament to that in experiencing that. So tell me, what are the plans for the future? Would you like to, when all your amazing sporting achievements are over, would you like to have a family? Would you like to settle down? I use that word very loosely. What's the plan for the future for you with, in terms of relationships and families and things like that?
I guess I'm still keen on continuing my sporting career for now. And I'm quite content with that. And, you never know what the future is going to bring and what opportunities might pop up. Right now I'm just content with doing the sports. And, you know, I might be one of these people that just continually does sport. I think we had a lovely lady. Her name is Libby. She's a shooter. And she was the more senior Paralympian, and you know, to be going to the Paralympics at her age, I won't say her age, but she's in her senior years, but yeah, to still have that passion, still have that drive to continue at the highest level in your sport is really inspiring. And you never know, I might just change to another sport and find another pathway to continue my sporting career when I'm too old to kayak.
Well, it was so interesting because we had Lisa Cox on the show a little while ago, and Lisa had a virus, which then caused her blood to go to her organs to survive, which then in turn she lost her fingers and her toes and her abilities as well, and so she's now in a wheelchair. And she was telling us the phenomenal stories of dating while in the wheelchair, and she met her husband after her experience with her virus, and she was telling us some awesome dating stories of online dating and meeting different men, how people react differently. So I'm quite interested to see when you do decide, or if you do decide to go on the dating journey, what amazing stories you'll have to tell us, because that's always a bit of fun and jest. And I just love the courage that, you know, you and Lisa and all those amazing people out there are showing and changing the perception that society has of anything different. So are you proud of yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, and, you know, I just hope that by sharing my story, I can inspire others to, you know, overcome whatever adversity they have and follow their dreams. And I just want to get that message out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are. And simply by striving for awesome achievements and by showing us what's possible, it is just phenomenal to see it all come together for you. So we're coming to the end of the show. I wonder if I could ask you any question, what question would that be?
I don't know.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with the audience that you felt you haven't shared yet?
I think we've had quite a good discussion. I mean, believing in yourself and going out there and having goals and working hard for them is a great message to be spreading and also to use this term differently able, which we can credit ourselves to. No.
Yeah, of course.
That would be great if we could get that being used instead of the word disabled, which doesn't really accurately describe people who have disabilities. And I guess I'm open to opportunities out there if anyone wants to follow my journey. I have websites. SusanCyphal.com and I'm on all the social medias and get in contact and you can follow what I'm up to.
Yeah, fantastic. So we'll put those links in the show notes as well. So tell us, what was your website address?
It's www.SusanCyphal.com. So that's
And how do you spell it?
SusanCyphal
.com. And what was the Facebook that I can just put your name in the search bar?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, Twitter. I think I'm on every social media there is. search my name, it should come up.
And once again, if people wanted to donate to keep you going, that link's on your website as well.
Yeah, that's through the Australian Sports Foundation. And there's a link on my website, and that's tax deductible, so for Australian residents.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And absolutely. And also, Susan is definitely available for speaking gigs as well. I know that you really want to engage a lot more in talking to people about your journey so you can continue to inspire other people with your amazing story. So if anyone would like Susan to speak at their event, you are also available and ready.
and schools as well.
And schools, particularly because I know that's what you said. Another passion of yours is definitely children and working with the children to help them, accept diversity and accept themselves. And I know that every time we speak to the children who are the future of who are the generations of our future, if we can give them whatever we can to become whole and beautiful people and to remember that they are special and unique. I mean, we just can't do enough there, can we?
Yeah, absolutely. Accepting themselves and their differences is what is really special, and it's going to be good for them in the future.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Susan. Once again, just to quickly recap, Susan, and I don't like using the word Paralympian exactly because of what we've discussed before. For me, you are an Olympian, and you are a champion, and you are the amazing role model in society that we need. And, you know, on behalf of everyone, I think we just thank you for fighting through the lows and celebrating the highs, and for doing it so publicly in front of us so we can aspire to be like you and to adopt the principles that you adopt of self-belief and resilience and being goal-orientated. It's phenomenal. So thank you so much for your time, Susan. Any final words you have to say for us today?
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for this great opportunity to speak to your listeners. Thanks.
It's an absolute pleasure. Well, my wonderful Fire Nation, as you know, we always have the choice to design a life of our choosing. And today's tools and strategies that Susan has shared with you, take those, write them down, and implement them to create the life that you want to lead, because that is your absolute power, your personal freedom, and your choice. Thank you again for listening to Petra Williams, the Fiery Enabler. Go and live a life on fire. Spread love, compassion, accept diversity. And hey, when you see someone who's differently abled in a wheelchair, just say hi. They're a person like you and I. Have a wonderful day. We'll speak to you soon. Ciao, ciao.
Coach on Fire Radio.